a CKGI podcast on FM 98.7 from Gabriola Island, British Columbia. I am Michelle Fire River Hart, and you're listening to Joy Infusion, the show that touches your heart and brings you a little joygasm every time you listen. From neurochemistry to those perfect moments in time, what is it that brings you into a state of joy? Welcome to the show. In this episode, I explore communication and some of the methods we use or can use to do this in an effective way. Communication is directly connected to relationships. How we communicate affects others' ability to understand us and builds or destroys relationships. In assuming that another will understand us when we communicate is, in my opinion, the first step in misunderstanding. In order to effectively communicate, we need to have a basic understanding of how the other person will interpret our words and actions. This is, of course, no small feat. If we take the time, however, with an open mind, to actually flush out through communication what others understands with the words we use, it forms a baseline that we can then use when communicating with that person. If we go one step further and then ask what the person has heard with our words, we get to a place where our communication is far more impactful, as it validates that what we are trying to communicate is actually being heard. We, of course, will never really know how it was interpreted due to us all coming from a different paradigm of our own uniqueness. But it does, however, limit the potential for misunderstanding. So I bring you Carol Keane, a nonviolent communication practitioner and teacher, the talking stick as a communication tool, Victor Anthony, a professional photographer and musician sharing his views on photography as a means of communication, and one way of creating relationship agreements. My intent is to offer some different knowledge and tools to potentially shift your experience of communication and help foster meaningful communication and happier relationships. We start with Carol Keane, a nonviolent communication practitioner and teacher, to speak to us about this model of communicating. Valentine's Day being last month, it brought up for me the subject of relationship and communication, as Valentine's Day is all about relationships from my perspective. Relationship with ourselves and others. How often have I not spoken the words that would have come from my heart, but rather a reactionary response due to unfulfilled needs in myself? In engaging with Carol over the years, what has struck me is how violent my language often is, and more often than not, it's aimed at me. Relationship with oneself is always the place to start when looking for a change with one's engagement in the world. It is so true that when pointing a finger outwards, there are always fingers pointing right back at you. Outside triggers invariably point towards work that needs to be done within one's own circle. So to further our knowledge and potentially improve our relationships with that knowledge, I welcome Carol to the show. So welcome, Carol.
Thank you, Michelle. Nice to see you again.
Yeah, you're becoming a regular on Joy Infusion. So, could you give us a summary on what NVC is? That's nonviolent communication.
NVC is a process of communicating. The two primary focuses are intention and self-empathy. Sorry. Intention being, you know, what is your, my intention in the interaction that I'm having with someone? And what do I want the outcome to look like? Do I want to make my life and their life more wonderful without giving away the farm? Or do I want to irritate them? Very rarely do I get up and say, I'm going to irritate everybody I come in contact with.
So what are the basic key assumptions and intentions of NVC?
Well, the basic... process is that if you take something in that doesn't resonate with you, or even if you take something in that does resonate with you, that you can state an observation that is non-judgmental.
So getting to that place of neutrality, right?
Yes.
Right, so you respond from neutrality.
Yes. And it's easier for the other person to understand what you're saying if it's like It's a recording, or you take a snapshot from a picture. Mm-hmm. Anyone can see it. Whereas if you've judged it already, that's from your own perspective. And that can cause, you know, more triangulation and, you know, getting people on your side and things like that. Whereas a neutral observation is about you. I observed this and it ticked me off. So I need to explore what that's about.
So should we try an example between the two of us so that we can show the listeners, well, listen, we can do something personal in my life.
Okay.
I don't mind being a guinea pig. And it's just really valuable to me to learn better skills for communication.
So there's two characters, and not all the practitioners use these characters. I mean, they all know about them, but they don't all use them. I tend to use them. There's a jackal, which is, let's say that's judgment, immediate gratification, wanting to get their needs met right away. And there's the giraffe, who has the biggest heart of all the land mammals. And also the big neck means you can look out and see where you want to go. Mm. And that might shape how you respond to things. Or it might not, depending on how much it means to you.
Well, that's awesome. That's easy for me to work with because I'm so used to working with animals in shamanic. Cool. Okay.
All right. So the jackal is your immediate response. So give me an example of what you wanted to work on something. Let's say you observed something that you didn't feel good about, or it's in conflict with your needs or values.
Okay, so when I'm offered something that I don't want, usually it's from someone very close to me, so I've already got buttons that are just waiting to go off. So I express my needs that I don't want that, yet it continues to be presented to me that, well, I'm going to do this for you. So very often I go immediately to anger.
Okay, so if you could narrow it down a little bit, like give a real example.
Okay, I'm going to get you a credit card in your name. No thanks. I don't need a credit card. I don't want a credit card. Yes, but you need it for emergencies, so I'm getting it for you anyway.
Okay, so what you probably heard was a little snippet. I'm getting it for you anyway. Mm-hmm. And then your jackal said...
Then my jackal just ups the ante, right? No, you're not hearing me. And my anger comes through in my voice. I've immediately lost my ability to stay grounded and neutral. Okay. And then I'll cave eventually.
Ah, better. So...
with one particular person.
So what I heard you say was you needed to be heard and understood.
Yes.
So that's a big need for you, to be heard and understood, as it is a big need for most of us, because that's the basis of relationship.
Yes, that is exactly what ticks me off the most, I guess. Mm-hmm.
And when you said you caved, I would think that is about your need for connection with that person.
Yeah, and acceptance, because it's one of my primary role models, talking between the lines.
So in that process, the beauty of self-empathy is there's a statement at the end which gives you self-empathy. And I might be able to fill that in for you, just because we just went there. No wonder I'm feeling angry and pissed off. Because I really value being heard and understood.
So now are you inviting me to say
that? I'm inviting you to say that.
Back to that person.
I'm inviting you to say that to yourself.
Ah, okay, yes. No wonder I'm feeling angry, because I really need and value to be heard and listened to.
Understood.
And understood.
So how does that feel when you say that to yourself?
My whole insides relax.
Exactly.
Because I feel validated even within myself, and I'm honoring my needs.
Yes. So it's much like in the airplane when they tell you to put on your own mask first.
Yes.
So it's self-empathy first. Mm. And then you may be able to be curious about what's up for the other person.
Okay.
Because they may love you and want the best for you, and they think that it will help you be safe to have to whatever they're trying to give you.
Mm-hmm.
And they want safety for you.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, because I have moments with this person where I actually am there and and it doesn't trigger me. At the moment, I have a higher stress level, so at the moment, my ability to be at choice with that was less.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe also there's a trigger around money for me.
Yes.
That's different than other areas.
And some other triggers might be time of day. You know, if you're really tired, you're less resourceful. If you're hungry. So there's other times you watch out for.
Sounds very much like when you're working sobriety. There's a saying, halt, hungry, angry, lonely, and tired. You watch out for those four things.
Right, same idea. Yeah. And when you're responding, or if it's going to be a conversation that has been difficult in the past, you might want to say, you know, I appreciate what you're saying, and I'd really like to come back to this tomorrow when I'm fresh.
Hmm. Awesome. Well, that's really helpful. Thank you.
So those are just a couple of things, and the jackal is your best friend.
As a teacher, is that what you mean?
As a teacher, because it really points to those values that really mean a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you do this self-empathy sheet that I'm showing you,
mm-hmm.
over and over again when you start, you know, underlining the needs, you'll see that lots of times the same ones are coming up.
Right.
So you realize those are really important to you.
Yeah, and that's the arena where your needs aren't being met.
Right.
Thank you.
So that's the Coles Notes version.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that was a great example. And are there any other benefits that come from learning and using the NVC method within the context of intimate relationship?
So two things just come up for me right away, and seeing I am in a relationship that's been 22 years.
Amazing.
Amazing. And I would say that one is befriending that jackal and recognizing it's not usually personal about the other person. It's just your needs aren't met or your values aren't met. Mm-hmm. So it wouldn't matter whether Tom, Dick, or Harry did the same thing. What would happen is you'd still react to it.
Right.
Because you value that. You don't value it because somebody else is in relationship. It's that you value it generally.
Right.
Specifically. It matters to you. And it wouldn't matter where that was. And that's the first thing, because it's not all about the other person. It's all about you and your values.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the other part is to give yourself the self-empathy first, you know, and then to be curious about what's up for them. What values and needs are they needing to have met too?
Right, because then that also gives you information for yourself and your own triggers. If you're understanding your triggers and understand their needs as well, then you have a much broader base of knowledge with which to work.
Yeah, and you know, like, needs and values are universal. So we all have the same needs and values, we just don't necessarily have them in the same priority.
Oh, that's interesting, because as you were saying that, my internal dialogue went, well, we don't all have the same needs and values. We might have the same needs, but not the same values. But you're right, they're in different layers,
mm-hmm.
and in different orders.
Yes. So usually at the beginning of my workshop, I make a list about what matters to people. And then we just think, what if all of your families, all of these needs on the paper were met? How would life be for them?
You're listening to CKGI FM 98.7 on Gabriola Island with your host, Michelle Fire River Hart. I'm talking with Carol Keene, a nonviolent communication practitioner and teacher. Back to Carol.
Yeah, and everyone, most people want the best for humanity and their friends and family, and it would be wonderful. You know, and that's what Marshall Rosenberg, who spawned NVC in the 60s, that's what he was about. He was curious about what his two experiences were, being beat up because he was a Jewish kid in Detroit, and his uncle coming over every day and caring for his mother who had Lou Gehrig's disease, and being so happy to do that, and smiling and loving, and the kids that were beating him up were also smiling. So, you know, he became quite, like, as he aged, like, what is that about? And then, you know, kind of went through this process, developed this process. It's about your needs and values and whether they're met or not.
And then developed a system to teach that and to help
to teach it. And it's about connection. So if you understand, if you feel understood, I'm much closer to that person who's understanding me because I'm not worried about getting my point across.
Yeah.
Because I know that if I say, you know, I need some space to think about this or to process it, that I will have that. And it's only when people push on that that sometimes doesn't work out the way you'd like it.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Always good to have humor in all things.
And the other thing that has come quite apparent during my own personal process with NVC is that I didn't have big vocabulary of needs and feelings. You know, sad, mad, bad, glad. I mean, that's the way it goes, right?
Yeah.
So I thought, well, if I could have more words, then it would help me connect with myself better. So I put this together so you can actually use it as a template when you're filling out the empathy sheet about what you're really needing and feeling, and you just have a bigger vocabulary.
So share with us some of this. Okay, so autonomy, choice to create dreams, goals, and values. Another one under autonomy is develop plans for meeting dreams, goals, and values. Another one is individuality, self-reliance, expression, choice, freedom, independence, and space. Okay, I see where you're going. Yes.
And these are some of the things you might be experiencing when your needs are met. And these are some of the things you might experience when your needs aren't met. So it's just really helpful because we don't spend a lot of time connecting with ourselves. We can spend a lot of time being angry and upset and projecting, but, you know, that self-understanding is what has to come first.
Yeah, well, nothing changes.
Because if I understand this about myself, it really helps me understand you and meet in that place of connection.
Absolutely.
Rather than criticism.
Yeah. Yeah, you flipped me to a moment in time in the past where I was always very angry. It was always my first emotion that came present when I was triggered. And when I started my healing journey, my last major part of my healing journey, I couldn't understand why people were afraid of me. Like it puzzled me. And we have something called body typing in shamanism, and I'm a particular body type. And it wasn't until about 3 years after that, I met someone that had my exact body type. And it struck me right between the eyes. I was like, oh, That's why people were afraid of me. I mean, I'd subsequently done some healing work and wasn't projecting in that way, but she showed me where I had been and why people had been afraid of that image and that energy that I was always projecting out from me. So, yeah. Yeah. Understanding yourself does absolutely give you empathy, because now I have a lot more space for angry people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas before, it would just make me angrier.
Yes. And the trigger for me is when someone's really angry or really upset, is that whatever they're talking about really, really matters to them. Mm-hmm. And that's what they want to say. They don't want someone to say, they're there, that's okay, because that just makes them more angry. They want to be heard.
Yeah.
And until they've self-articulated enough, they can go to that place of self-empathy. You mentioned relationships and Valentine's Day, and that just brought back this thought about relationships, like, are so important, and people spend so much time trying to change the other person rather than understand and love who they are, because we all need the same things.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of accepting that and seeing the beauty in someone. And Marshall always said it's either power over, because that's what it's been for many years, or making life wonderful.
Well, do you want to read for us the parable of the two wolves?
I would love to, because I think this really connects with part of that self-knowledge that nonviolent communication encourages. Mm-hmm. So the parable of two wolves. One evening, an old Cherokee told his grandson about a battle that goes on inside all people. He said, "My son, the battle is between two wolves that dwell inside each and every one of us. We can create harm. It is anger, envy, jealousy, sorrow, regret, greed, arrogance, self-pity, guilt, resentment, inferiority, lies, false pride, superiority, and ego. The other can support life. It is joy, peace, love, hope, serenity, humility, kindness, benevolence, empathy, generosity, truth, compassion, and faith." The grandson thought about it for a minute and then asked his grandfather, "Which wolf will win?" The old Cherokee replied, "The one you feed."
Yes, that is so true.
The jackal or the giraffe?
The jackal or the giraffe. So, if people would like to learn more about nonviolent communication, where can I direct them?
They could email me,
which
is keane, at island.net.
Okay.
That would be a good way, and I do workshops in the community as well.
Awesome. Well, I will put that on the website. All right, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was Carol Keane, nonviolent communication practitioner and teacher. I have come away from this interview with greater compassion for myself and a greater awareness of how I can work with nonviolent communication techniques to have what comes out of my mouth be impactful in a positive way, hopefully creating greater opportunity for me to be heard, hear others, and less moments of hurtful misunderstanding. We are all individually responsible for our reactions to what people say. However, as humans, we seem to have honed the skill of knowing what will hurt another. What if we used that knowledge to communicate effectively? From personal experience, I know that there have been way too many times when I have opened my mouth and totally stuck my foot in it. Sometimes the results have been hilarious. However, other times they have been hurtful without intention. And sometimes with intention. I have always regretted those moments and wished that I had said something else. Having worked on this issue for many years, my foot-in-mouth incidents have decreased dramatically. However, they do still happen. I look forward to the freedom that will come from me retraining myself to speak in a way that is cooperative, conscious, and compassionate. Now let's listen to Donovan from his Greatest Hits album. The song is called To Susan on the West Coast Waiting. This song hits so many different forms of communication that I thought it was just perfect to add in here. He's communicating through writing and singing. He gives context to where he is and where he's coming from inside of himself. Here we go. Was Donovan to Susan on the West Coast Waiting. You're listening to CKGI FM 98.7 on Gabriola Island with your host Michelle Fire River Hart. Well, now to something that I have used within shamanism for years. I share the knowledge of the talking stick. I emphasize that this is from my perspective. I am in no way representing any particular culture or tradition. I am simply sharing my knowledge as I feel this is an invaluable tool for being heard and hearing others. A talking stick can be used for any interaction between people, from two to a whole group. It allows the holder of the talking stick to speak without interruption, judgment, or comment. A time to just be heard. Until that person passes the stick to another, others in the space sit and quietly listen. How do you get a talking stick? You make one in a ceremony. First, the intent for the talking stick is determined. Is it for a family, a couple, or a group? It is powerful to create the stick together so that everyone's energy and beauty is brought to the stick. Different woods hold different energies. However, it can be as simple as a particular piece of wood that you find beautiful or seems to call to you to use it. You then decorate it. Some parts of the decorating have intents and some are just for beauty. It can also be used as a tool of reflection. When used in this way, the one speaks and then the other reflects back what was spoken until true understanding is reached. This can be used in disputes, to forge agreements, or just to have an opportunity to speak without interruption. The power of the talking stick is it is a tool that can be used by anyone of any age so that everyone can be heard. If you would like more information or the ceremony to make a talking stick, please contact me at www.galagohealing.webs.com. You can also contact me through the CKGI website, www.ckgi.ca. Now let's listen to Tishnamu, All of You, by Kashtan, off the album Innu, as the talking stick connects all those that use it. Well, that was All of You by Kashtan of the album Innu. In thinking about communication, I thought of all the different ways we can communicate, one of which is art. I find art as a communication tool particularly interesting, not only because I am an artist, but because it lends itself to communicating so many things to so many people, all through one work of art. In our uniqueness, we interpret art as individually as it's made. So one piece of art can have as many lessons or more than the number of viewers. What a gift that is when you think of the ripples that are made in the process. One man that has created ripples in my life is Victor Anthony, a photographic artist and musician here on Gabriola. He shifted my understanding and experience of photography and my photographic work. So I bring you Victor Anthony. I'm sitting here with Victor Anthony, who is one of our local Gabriola photographers. The reason being, this show is on communication. Victor taught me about something I had no awareness of at the time, which was communication through the art of photography. So I'm going to start by asking you, what drew you to photography and when? Like, how young were you when you started?
Well, I was, you know, barely into double digits. I have a picture of me around age 11 or so with a brownie around my neck, you know, so it goes way back. But I guess I got serious about it in 1978. I had a friend who was working professionally, and she taught me to process film, to make prints in the darkroom at a very rudimentary level. And I bought my first 35mm for real serious camera around that same time. And she also showed me some work by some photographers who to this day I'm still inspired by. And that's the Magnum guys, Henri Cartier-Bresson, Robert Frank, Elliot Erwitt, Joseph Kudelka, those people. Mm-hmm. She put those books in front of me, and it was kind of all over at that point. So, yeah.
So you knew you'd found a passion.
Well, I knew I'd found something that I wanted to pursue. Yeah, they made it look so easy. Those guys did, and it didn't take too terribly long to figure out that it was not easy at all. It was probably the most difficult type of photography to do. But I was young and foolish and, you know, went for it.
Well, I'm laughing in part by your comment, but secondarily because you opened me up to the point that I was young and foolish. Well, not so young, but foolish in my assumption that photography was easy. I love taking photographs, but I came to it fairly late, just a couple of years ago. And you and I were out on a boat, doing a Help the Kelp work this summer, and we were both taking photos. And I had my very big self-importance with me that day because I was with you and we were both taking photos. Anyway, then you put out for us this Help the Kelp photo for our publicity that day. And I was gobsmacked, in your words. You had captured everything we were doing that day in one photograph. And you totally blew my paradigm of what photography was. And for the first time ever, I understood that you could tell a story through a photo. So would you tell us about that, about telling stories through photography from your perspective?
Well, it's pretty simple, really. I mean, if you're standing on the top of a hill, you've got a 360-degree view, right? So the first thing you do is choose what to put in your frame. And after that, all you really have to figure out is when to press the button.
Yeah, but I see more than that in your photos.
That's good. That's good. But that's really all there is to it. Especially now. I mean, when I started way back when, there was a lot more technical stuff that a person had to learn just to get a proper exposure and make a proper print in the darkroom. Now you just press a button and it's done. Everything's done. You know, cameras are the focus is automatic. Everything is done for you, right? Mm-hmm. So really, now, all you have to do is choose what to put in your frame and when to press the button.
Okay, so I'm going to come at the question from a different angle. Do you put forethought into wanting to tell the story that comes through in that photo?
Oh, of course.
Okay.
Of course. Anytime a photographer or anyone else that's making a visual image, a painter or whatever, they choose that frame very carefully because they have in their mind, if not a story, certainly a concept that they want to put forth, right? Mm-hmm. Say you're back on the top of that 360-degree view hill, right? And off to the south, there's two ravens flying in the sunlight, and it's gorgeous, and that's what you're focused on. Back to the north, there's purple pigs flying out of a neon green cloud, but they're not in the picture. The photographer that day didn't think the pigs were as interesting as the ravens, so he or she doesn't photograph the flying pigs, they photograph the ravens. Most photographers would photograph the flying pigs.
Right. Right.
But so you're making an editorial statement, I guess is what I'm getting at. Mm-hmm. Right. You choose very carefully what's at the edges of your frame. And the edges are really, really important. People, especially with an autofocus camera, you've got that little dot in the center, and that's, you know, where you put your attention, the frames, the corners. Mm. There's a lot of juice in the corners. You have to pay attention to the corners, right?
Right.
So what you choose to put in the frame, and then when to press the button, you know. That particular picture, I just waited until you looked like, you looked really scientific. You know? And the light was good, and, you know, you had the notepad, you had all your gear, right? You could, all of that was in the frame, and as soon as it all lined up just exactly, press the button, that was it. I didn't make 10 exposures, I just made one. I just waited until everything lined up.
So that actually answers the question I was going to ask you next, which is, do you ever conceive of an idea and then make it happen? And that's what you did that day. You you knew your mandate, so to speak, of what you wanted that picture to represent.
The reason I was in the boat was to tell a story about what we were doing. Mm-hmm. And when I got in the boat, I didn't know if I'd get that picture or not.
Mm-hmm.
It's a crapshoot, right? You never mm-hmm. know. I've been out with Help the Kelp before and didn't get the picture. That day I did.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew what I wanted. I didn't know I was going to get a picture of you, you know, with a beautiful blue ocean. I didn't know what the picture was going to be, but I knew what I wanted to say.
Right.
Right? Because I was passionate about the work we were doing. And, mm-hmm. and I wanted, you know, so I certainly had an idea of what it might be. Beyond that, I had no idea. Mm-hmm. So you just have to be patient and wait. But no, be patient and attentive.
Yeah.
Right? You really have to pay attention. That's one of the things that I love more than anything else about photography, because when I'm doing it, I am so focused, and I am so out of myself and out of my ego, and, you know, it's all about what's in front of me and what's interesting and what's not. Mm-hmm. Right? It's so... I started to say it's like playing music, but it's not really. Well, it's like playing music by yourself, not playing music for an audience, but playing music by yourself, because you're just so in that moment and nothing else in this world matters, right? And yeah, so when I'm out and about with the Leica over my shoulder, I mean, sometimes I'm just hanging out or taking a walk with Joelle or whatever, but when I'm out by myself, I'm serious, right? I don't know what's going to be presented to me, but I try to be awake and mm-hmm. alert to what might be around the corner.
Yeah, the possibilities. Mm-hmm.
Right. And I love that about the type of photography that I do. You know, there's so many other types of photography which also can communicate very effectively, but I'm not into the studio thing, or, you know, I'm much more interested in trying to catch life as it goes by. Right?
Yeah. You're listening to CKGI FM 98.7 on Gabriola Island with your host, Michelle Fire River Hart. I'm speaking with Victor Anthony, a Gabriola photographer and musician, about communication through the art of photography. Now back to Victor.
Do you have a favorite one where it was like, wow, I got that?
Or one of your favorites, because sometimes when I put the word favorite on it, it creates too much constriction.
I've got some I'm more proud of than other. I don't think I've done my best work yet. I think, you know, I think I'm on the right road. I certainly have a few pictures that I'm pretty well chuffed with, but I know that I can do better, you know. And I've got time. They still make film. Yeah. It's the favorite sting changes, you know, almost daily, right? I haven't taken that one.
You know,
I don't have it yet. Or maybe I do, but I don't know it yet.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe in 20 years I'll know it, but I don't know.
Well, what about from a different angle? Do you have one that touched your heart the most?
Hmm. You mean of my own work?
Yeah.
Hmm. Well, I guess the obvious choice to that would be a picture that I took with the Leica right before my father passed away. It's a picture of him and my mother on their steps. It's just a snapshot, right? My mother's laughing, you know, and my father's actually got this little kind of grin on his face, and he wasn't a very smiley guy, and he died not long after that, and so it's pretty priceless.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't like to have his picture taken, you know. I don't have many pictures of him, at least from the front. And my mother's, she's just beaming and laughing, and, you know, so they're both really, I got them, the essence of both of them in one frame. And it's almost, I don't know if I could, I've got a print of it to show you, but anyway, it's a nice photo.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that it necessarily tells a story. I certainly wouldn't hang it as art, but your question was, touched your heart, and
yeah.
I have to say that one.
Yeah. Okay, so let's go. If you were invited to put one of your photos that you've already done into a time capsule, which one would it be?
Let me just scroll through. Into a time capsule. I have a photograph of an older couple dancing. And it's a little bit blurry because I didn't have a lot of light, but the essence is there, right? And it's the older person, the older gentleman's 90th birthday. And he's dancing with his wife at his 90th birthday party. It's not my best picture, but if I were going to leave a picture for someone 1,000 years in the future, I would want it to say love, right? And that picture says it.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Victor.
That's it?
There is no better ending.
There you go.
Thank you. There's no better ending from my perspective, as love is the one thing that has such power through all types of communication. If we could get communicating love down to a science, so much else would fall away. Now let's listen to Look Me in the Heart by the one and only Tina Turner from her album, Simply the Best.
Say that I'm hiding
Was Look Me in the Heart by Tina Turner. A fitting beginning, I think, to talk about relationships and relationship agreements. Communication within intimate relationships can be good, bad, or somewhere in between. I have found that without clear agreements, a lot of unnecessary communication comes to the fore. When a couple has a relationship agreement in place, you both know and have agreed to how your relationship is structured. I'm not talking about relationship agreements that just deal with financial matters or children, but rather an all-encompassing agreement about your relationship. I have had the good fortune to be introduced to shamanic relationship agreements. You do not in any way need shamanic knowledge or want to participate in shamanism. This relationship agreement gives you a structure to use to formulate your own personalized agreement. What it does is eliminate the small stuff and invite you to set goals and expectations around the big stuff. Too often, I have seen people bickering over who's done the laundry, taken out the garbage, spent money, or the real biggie, not getting enough sex. All these things are set out and agreed upon in a relationship agreement. It touches on every arena in your lives together. You will end up with an agreement that honors both your needs, flushes out what for each of you would break up the relationship, and what you intend to co-create together. You will set a timeline that you both agree upon to review your agreement and see if changes are needed. It also flushes out if you are compatible enough, as when talking about what you need, if the other is not able or willing to agree to your needs, it very quickly becomes evident that rocky roads are ahead. Or indeed, even though the fire of attraction is present, when you actually get to know the needs of each other, you see it is not the relationship that would feed you emotionally, spiritually, and physically. Too often, during our initial attraction to one another, we ever so subtly start changing our naturalness in order to be loved. This is not healthy. It cuts deeply when we betray ourselves and can lead to very destructive behaviors. Our need to be loved starts at home. In order to truly love another, we need to honor and love ourselves. The nature of this relationship agreement affords us the opportunity to flush out and honor ourselves and our partner's needs within a neutral format. You will have the opportunity to make agreements on everything that touches your lives together. Household management, financial agreements, children or no children, taking care of the children, pets or no pets, care of those pets, and yes, even sex. Whether you're monogamous or polyamorous, do you need time alone? How much time and when? When you actually have agreements on all your needs and have made agreements to your partner's needs, it is amazing to find that you are now freed from so much that people worry about within relationship. Yes, there will always be challenging moments in relationship. It is where we get the most opportunity to heal. However, when we have clearly stated our needs and heard another's, made agreements around those needs, those challenging moments are, in my opinion, fewer. In most arenas in life, what is expected of us is clearly stated and we agree to the terms or not. Why then do we go blindly into the most important arena of our lives without knowing what the requirements and goals of the parties concerned are? In part, perhaps, it is that a lot of us do not know what we need consciously. This ceremonial process of a relationship agreement affords us the time to find out, instead of trying to find another to fulfill our needs for us, which I know from personal experience doesn't work out so well. I offer the knowledge of this relationship agreement. Should you choose to want more information on it, please contact me at www.galagohealing.webs.com or through the CKGI website, www.ckgi.ca. Now here's Donovan singing Wear Your Love Like Heaven from his album Donovan's Greatest Hits. For whether you believe in heaven or not, the archetype of heaven is pure love.
Color in sky, brush and blue, scarlet fleece changes hue, crimson ball sinks from view. Sky Havana Lake, color sky rose carmethine, alizari and crimson.
This episode has left you with some new knowledge and tools for more effective communication. I, for one, am forever changed by what I have learned. Thank you for listening to this episode of Joy Infusion on CKGI FM 98.7, Gabriola Co-op Radio, with your host Michelle Fire River Harp. Have a joygasmic week, and remember, we're also on the internet at ckgi.ca.